Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 222, Finance Friday edition, where we interview Gina and talk about creative investments.
The only thing I've learned from him financially, he never taught me about money, but he was very frugal. And it's something I can't really let go of to this day, just being super frugal.
Yeah.
The only thing I really want to spend money towards is investments. Like, I do want the truck, but I don't know. I'd rather buy another investment.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me, as always, is my definitely surviving a zombie apocalypse co-host, Scott Trench.
It wasn't too hard, Mindy. They were all vegan zombies in search of grains, not the other thing. So I was in good shape. Mindy liked that one.
I did. That was hilarious. Okay, Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to Every Money Story, because we truly believe that financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or invest in 30 venture capital type things one by one over the course of years, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards your dreams.
You know, Scott, that's interesting that you say that. 30 venture capital programs. I think that they're not quite at 30, but they're getting pretty close. Scott and Gina, not Scott Trench, Gina and her husband, Scott, join us today to talk about creative investments. And boy, oh boy, do they have some very creative investments, some that I have never heard of, some that I didn't even know you could invest in. So it's a lot of fun talking to Scott and Gina today.
Yeah. I mean, just unpacking their financial position took us like, what, 25 minutes with this? And it's fascinating. What a unique set of circumstances, I think, something that we have never encountered here on the Bigger Pockets Money show. And I think it's really interesting. When they go through, it's at least 5 to 10 different, completely different types of investments that they've made, all non-traditional. No, there's basically no stock investments going on here and no traditional real estate investments. There's syndications and things like that with this. So it's really difficult to assess their net worth. It's really difficult to assess the return profile of these investments. And so you're going to hear me in this episode as my biggest piece of advice to them, recommend the developing the skill set of financial modeling, right? This is probably overkill for many folks that are not trying to do this kind of stuff. But if you're interested, we will link to a free Excel course. It's from a guy called Excel is Fun. We have no affiliation with Excel is Fun. I just took this course when I started as a financial analyst 7-8 years ago. And I think it's one of several ways to develop this skill set. But if you're interested in doing lots of analysis on small businesses or different types of investments and like that, I think that would be a really good hard skill to practice for a little bit. So you're capable of budgeting and making assumptions and getting to the meat of what is going to actually drive the needle in terms of these things, valuing how much time you're going to have to spend and what the dollar per hour value of that time will be. You know, hey, if I'm going to spend 600 hours on a project and it's going to pay me $4 an hour, maybe I don't want to do that. And I should factor that into the return profile of the venture investment that I'm considering with this. So that would be the biggest piece of advice there. And we will link to that in the show notes here at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow222.
Yeah. One thing I want to say before we bring in Gina and Scott is that they are investing in these alternative investments from a position of no debt and a fairly guaranteed income. So the advice that we give on these, or I'm sorry, the suggestions that we give on these Finance Fridays are always geared towards that one person or that couple and their specific set of circumstances. They have no debt outside of their mortgage. They have no debt. And that's a hugely powerful position to be in. So if you're thinking that some of these alternative investments sound really great, but you yourself have a little bit of debt or a lot of debt, this may not be the best choice for you at this time. So just keep in mind that they are investing from a position of no debt. So
Again, like we got what, 10, 12, however many different types of businesses, all material investments, $20,000, $25,000, $50,000 invested in these things. And so because they're all alternative assets and not traditionally valued, many of which are illiquid, like investment in an apartment complex, investment in a documentary, with these types of things, these completely alternative investments in a dog, right? As an investment, like when you have those types of investments, it's impossible to determine your net worth unless you have the skill set to be able to do that on a regular basis, a la financial modeling. And I want to point out that I was wondering about this after we recorded, if, you know, we should have just, you know, maybe advised, hey, go begin liquidating or disbanding this portfolio and go to something more traditional like real estate or stocks. But I think that would be irresponsible advice as well, because they're not doing this irresponsibly. They bring in much more income than they spend and have a great emergency reserve. And they're not levered against these assets. When you invest in alternative like this, you can lose everything you invest, but you're probably not going to lose more than you invest. Like you can in real estate, for example, if your property goes underwater and the mortgage is more than the property's value. So I don't think that they're doing anything wrong with this, but I just think it's impossible for you, me, or them to determine if this is more effective than a traditional stock or real estate investment portfolio, because we can't model out and evaluate each asset from that position of having the skill to do that. And so that's I think the biggest takeaway. So that's a big long intro for this, but hopefully that's helpful.
And before we bring in Gina and Scott, let's remind our listeners that the contents of this podcast are informational in nature and are not legal or tax advice. And neither Scott nor I nor Bigger Pockets is engaged in the provision of legal, tax, or any other advice. You should seek your own advice from professional advisors, including lawyers and accountants, regarding the legal, tax, and financial implications of any financial decision you contemplate.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Take control of your investments and secure a stable 8% annual return today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets. It's Military Appreciation Month, so I'd like to personally thank all our past guests who have served and all our listeners who are serving, deployed, veterans, or in the reserves. But I'm not the only one showing appreciation. Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond with exclusive rates, discounts, and tools. This month, join Navy Federal and get $50 when you open a credit card. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate
to see their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy federal offers. With 24/7 U.S.-based member service and resources for veterans transitioning to civilian life, Navy Federal is here to help you reach your goals. Head to NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Disclaimer, must join an open membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. Annual percentage yield 0.25% for membership savings account. $5 minimum balance to open, maintain membership savings account, and to obtain bonus. Visit NavyFederal.org for more terms and conditions.
Gina and her husband make a great income, but they've been having a little bit of trouble reining in their spending. They're in the middle of a live-in flip, which is my favorite, and looking for ways to cut expenses to enable them to save more for even more real estate investing. Gina and Scott, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Thank you. We're big fans.
So Gina and Scott are our guests and Mindy and Scott are the hosts. So this isn't going to be confusing at all. Let's jump right into it. Gina and Scott, not Trench, what is your income and expenses, debts and investments?
Okay. So collectively, we do make a little bit over $100,000 a year. And that includes my salary and Scott's disability. He is in the he was in the Marine Corps for over 9 years, and also that also includes our investment, and that so that equates to about $8,300 a month. And right now Scott just got back from a nursing COVID deployment, and so he's looking for a per diem nursing gig here. And also, when Scott was deployed, he did make a crazy amount of money. He made more than what I made in a year and a month. So, and he was there for 6.5 months. Yeah.
Wow. What did you do with that?
Pretty much he had to bribe me to stay longer because we wanted him to only stay for like a month or two, but he had to bribe me to stay longer because he's more long-term and I'm more like, I'm a millennial. So I'm like, I want you home now, you know?
Well, but they don't pay you a lot to sit around on the beach and sip Mai Tais. That's kind of, I'm assuming you were in a slightly more dangerous area than, you know, just sitting around.
It was, on the COVID units, and it's usually the understaffed and...
Oh, this was the COVID unit?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I want you home too.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you for doing that, but also we want you home because you don't get COVID nearly as high risk as if you're actually working there when in the middle of COVID. Okay, yeah. So what is the disability income? Is that included in the $8,300?
Yes.
Okay. Then yeah. I will just.
And does that continue if you find full-time employment with the next gig?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Ooh, then can we pull that out and specifically note what that disability income is?
Okay. It's $3,500 a month.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you're hurt. But I guess I shouldn't be all excited. Yay! But that's a nice amount of money that's just coming in every month forever.
It just started.
Okay.
Yeah.
Recently. So it's just a combination of disabilities that occurred.
Okay.
So, and that's why I'm not going back full time necessarily, because it's, I had to pretty much rough it. I mean, hurt myself, my back, especially a couple times on that deployment, and you can only take one day off. So I literally had to work through everything.
Okay. So, well, $3,500, I think, is a significant amount of money that we should pull out of the $8,300.
And that continues in perpetuity. Does it go up with inflation over time, or how does that?
It does go up. They'll reevaluate every year, so it can go up. Usually it goes up like 1% or 2% per year. It just depends on what Congress passes, because through the VA.
Okay, great. But that will continue for forever. Is that right?
It can. So they'll do like reevaluations every 5 years and see if things have gotten worse, gotten better. But I'm assuming it's going to go on.
Okay. Well, I think that's, you know, very unfortunate to be in a situation where you're earning that. But at the same time, it's an important part of the financial story that we have to acknowledge with this discussion.
Yeah, definitely.
So, So you mentioned VA. That do you have VA health benefits for the family forever?
So it's mainly just me. So I'm 100% covered medical, now dental, but I need to apply for that, and prescriptions. Now they do have a program where I'm still finding out about it, but they'll be covered, but to a less extent, and we'll have to pay out of pocket for some of it.
Okay. That's an important part of it, because I'm assuming that you have health insurance then, Gina, through your employer.
Yeah, I do work for an e-commerce company. I actually pay it for my kids. We have two boys. So my insurance is free, which is amazing. However, I do have to pay for my kids for their insurance.
Okay. That is, in this context, I think that's very helpful. Okay. So is there any other income besides the salary and the disability income? You said that there's...
Yeah, we do have investments. So right now we do have, we put in $25,000 for a gym investment, and that's a 12% ROI. So we used to get actually $250 a week, or not a week, a month. We used to get $250 a month, but because of COVID, you know how everything shut down. Our gyms shut down. So we invested in, how many gyms was it? Three?
Well,
three countries. It was three.
Specifically, ours was into three of them, but they're trying to take over. They're mostly in California, and California was one of the biggest shutdown areas in the US. So they're acquiring gyms all along Southern California. They even went into Mexico now, but yeah. They're expecting the payments to start up towards the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're not investing in a gym. You're investing in a conglomerate, a business that owns many, many gyms and is expanding.
Yeah.
So we're part of this investment club, and they find deals, and they've been pretty successful with, I think, just about all of their investments up to this point. And they bring us deals, and you get to decide if you want to go in or not.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would love to learn more about this investment club.
Also, we have a gas and oil investment that we invested in. This was 2 years ago. We took a risk and invested our whole savings, which was $25,000, and we put that towards the gas and oil. And so that is they're collectively drilling in Texas. And because of COVID, of course, things slowed down. So we haven't seen a return yet. We did get one check. However, because of COVID, it did slow things down. But they are actively drilling and finding gas and oil. So we're excited to see the return on that. And also, we put in $25,000 on a documentary. We did sign an NDA, so we can't talk about too much about the deets. But the film broker did shop it to Netflix. And Netflix loved it so much that they said that they wanted more episodes. So that's where our investment club came back to us and said, oh, we're going to do a round of funding so we could create more episodes. So that's where we decided, oh yeah, we want to go in on this. This is exciting, you know? So we did that. We also have a 24 unit that we put $50,000 in for 18% ownership. And we also have a 52 unit that we put in $50,000 for 4% ownership. And this is with Alex Felice. I know you guys know him.
I think everybody knows Alex.
I know. But yeah, we're so grateful for your guys' show because we met him through Bigger Pockets.
Oh, really? Oh, you didn't know him before. Okay.
Yeah.
We love Alex. He's a great friend and an awesome guy. Have we had him on the Money Show yet, Mindy?
We haven't. You would remember that.
Yeah. I've been on his podcast, but I don't think we've had him on. We'll have to invite him at some point.
We should invite him.
How much collectively do you have invested in these alternative investments?
Probably it was like $230,000.
In everything? Yeah.
Yeah, because we also have Scotty, you want to talk about our memory care home that we have as well? We're a mess. As you can see, we dabbled into so many things that we're just like, you know. So.
We never focused on one thing in the tactic. We kind of just went everywhere.
It seems like you guys are doing your fundamentals perfectly. You're saving up a ton of cash and you're deploying it one after another in the next investment with that. And now you've got a unique portfolio as well with a lot of this stuff, which I think is really interesting. But yeah, let's hear about this other one.
Yeah.
Okay. So for this memory care home, we started about 2 years ago here in Las Vegas. It's a residential assisted living. So just a six-bedroom house. We can have eight residents. And we kind of just jumped in. We should have did more research, but we were newer. We didn't know. We have a business partner that we know through church. We think pretty similar, me and him, Nick and I. We just jumped into everything. We didn't really assess the location, all this. We know we want to be in business. We had similar interests, so we kind of just jumped in.
And then with his nursing background and him losing his dad, we've lost our parents. So it was kind of like a natural instinct to want to open a care home so we could be able to care for others. We wanted to own a business that actually you're giving back to the elder community, but also making money at the same time. Yeah.
Awesome. And so I'm hearing lots of good intent, but what sounds like maybe things are not going so well with this investment, or are they going very well?
Decent. We're not putting money into it anymore. Those days it kind of hurt. We were constantly paying for payroll, or we were there ourselves being the caregivers. It's a difficult job.
It is a difficult job, and it's difficult to do well. It's really easy to do poorly, which is unfortunate. I think that there's a lot of issues surrounding the whole thing. So I think there's some opportunity to discuss that a little bit, but let's jump back into the debts and expenses really quick. Let's see, income and... investments.
Since we just went through the investments, I've got gym ownership, gas and oil investment, documentary, 24 unit, 52 unit residential assisted living, and a very difficult time evaluating the value of these investments at any moment in time, but you can tell how much you put in. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, do you want to talk about your crypto? Are we allowed to talk about crypto in this episode?
Sure.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
And I'd love to know your cash position and your other investments, maybe in retirement accounts, if you have any like that.
Oh, yeah.
We have a question about her retirement account. We'll get to that soon. But so I've been into crypto since like 2017. I know you guys aren't the biggest fans of crypto, but...
I'm not, but Scott does.
I watched a little bit of crypto.
Go up. And I watched it crash down to 2017, and I was mad at myself for not taking any profits. So this time I said to myself, you know, I'm going to end up pulling out, which I haven't yet. So right now I only put 21,000 in total. Last I checked last night, it was at 66,000. As much as I don't want to pull it out right now, I have a feeling it's going to go up again, even if it doesn't. I'm not mad. I just don't want to take a tax hit on it.
If you sell, you'll take a tax hit.
Yes.
Sell, Uncle Sam.
Anything.
Now, Scott, do you take a tax hit? Like, does Uncle Sam take a preliminary tax hit based on the gain throughout the year? I was talking to David Daly about this.
I
didn't really understand what he was talking about.
The only time you don't get taxed is when you buy. But if you trade within different cryptos, if you sell any of your assets, it's a taxable event.
Okay. But they're not taking taxes like, oh, you bought it here and now it's worth this. So you have to pay taxes on this even though you haven't sold. Okay.
No.
Because that was confusing when I was talking to David. Yeah. Maybe I misunderstood.
What you're thinking, Mindy, is if you get paid for something in crypto instead of dollars, like someone hands you Bitcoin instead of dollars for something, you have to pay tax on the then present value of the Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency in exchange for the goods or services that you bartered with it. So it's much more complicated. There's a conversion factor from that to the dollar. I think that's maybe what you're thinking of, but you don't pay tax on gains until you realize the gains.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. And just yet another reason why I am not personally going to invest in crypto, but
let's keep going through the assets. This is the most interesting asset list we have come across on the Money Podcast in all this time.
Our memory care home, we average about $20,000 in income. Our overhead is around $9,000 and our bills are $5,000. We do have a savings that includes $15,000, but we are saving up because we do want to extend, because right now we're only licensed for 8 residents. So in order for us in Nevada, we could be up to 10 residents. So we're going to save and extend out and do renovations and add additional 2 rooms.
So you're saying that there's $15,000 in savings in that business?
Yeah, in the business account.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's another...
yeah,
I don't know going. If
this... we're going to show...
This is our puppy.
That's, my daughter's going to love that.
All right.
Yes. He's a fluffy Frenchie and they're a rare breed. And Scotty, do you want to tell them how much you spent on that dog?
It was $20,000.
All right. I'm sensing that there's an investment case here as well.
Yeah. So our intention was to use him as a stud service. And so his stud service fee can be anywhere. When you first start out, it can start at $1,500 all the way up to $3,000. We would start out at $3,000 and then it could go all the way up to $15,000. And that just depends on the DNA match with him and the female. So, yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Let's keep rolling. What else?
I know it's so crazy and random, but yeah, that's one of the investments that we love Frenchies. We have 2 Frenchies. So we're like Frenchie freaks. So it's naturally, we just wanted to get into that business.
Have you guys listened to the episode? Who do we have, Mindy, that talked about the alternative investment list?
Oh, that was Kirk Chisholm. And that was Kirk Chisholm. So
you guys are going through his entire list here. This is phenomenal. Cause he talked
is
about
that good
that
or bad?
Have dogs or horses, that kind of stuff. And you know, do what you're doing with this.
Yeah.
So, that was episode 144.
Okay. Well, definitely. I don't know if I've heard of that one, but.
Let's keep rolling. So we got the crypto, we got the dog, we got the we finished out the assisted living business.
Yeah. So that is pretty much what we have as for investments. And now for liquid, we have $40,000 liquid, and that includes $2,500 savings, and we are saving up for a Haiti water well. So a few years ago, Scotty and I went to Haiti and we went to an orphanage that had 60 kids, and we just felt led and drawn to go back. So we're going to save up for a water well. And this is where it's about $10,000 to build out a water well. And for them, they could, once they build out the water well at the orphanage, they could sell the water locally. So it's a business for them. So that's our main goal, is to be able to build that business for them. So it could keep income coming in. And then also our emergency fund is about $20,000. We do have a fund for Scott's truck because he does want to get a truck really bad.
I can wait.
But in that fund, it's $12,500. We do have a family trip fund, and that's $2,500 in there. And then we also have, this is one of our biggest goals as well, is to write a children's book course on finances. So we have $2,500 in that account, and that's going to pay for illustrations. So yeah.
You've got 2 kids. I would take that $2,500 and put it in another fund and say, hey guys, start drawing.
I know, right?
Do you guys have any traditional retirement accounts like Roth or 401k?
Okay, so I did have a 401k, but at the time during the pandemic, I took out all of the 21,000 that I had in there and took the 10% penalty. And that was to fund our 52 unit. So that was one of our questions was, should I pay back the 21,000 since we have 40,000 liquid, or should we just move on and use it, or just, yeah.
Which direction to go?
I don't know the answer to that quite yet, but we'll keep that in mind as we get going, as we get rolling with all this. So, anything else, any other businesses that you haven't funded, but you've started or things going on like that?
I forgot. So before the pandemic, we actually, we put our kids into a 3D printing class, and we invested in a 3D printer, a really expensive one. They did generate around $700 for that year. And they were making 3D printed items for my friends, family, and their friends, and they would hustle. Our boys are 10 and 12 years old, so they have a little bit of their entrepreneurials from us, I guess you can say.
We try to push them in that direction.
Yeah, we try to push them in that direction. So every year
I'm
we ask them.
Any entrepreneurial.
Every year we ask them what they want to be. So it changes every year.
As it should. You don't need to know when you're 10 what you want to do. But yeah. Starting to make money is really awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have any more on the list of investments or businesses?
I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Okay,
oh, that's so we've got it. Our okay.
cash, our investments, 401ks, Roth IRAs, there we go.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea how to peg your net worth. So
I know.
I don't either.
Given
I was going to ask you guys, but I couldn't figure it out. There's just too much going on.
Yeah, you're going to have a crazy time attempting to value the long list of assets you have here with this. Let's call it 500K, making that up in assets here outside of the home and all that kind of stuff. You guys have a house as well?
Yes.
Yeah, we're doing a live-in flip. And because of Scotty being able to go on that nurse deployment, we were able to save and hire that out, which is amazing because we were going to attempt to do most of the work ourselves, which would have took 3 years.
I wasn't looking forward to doing all that by myself.
It'll take 3 years, but you got to live there for at least 2 anyway. So
yeah,
but yeah, living in a construction zone can be less than ideal.
Yeah.
Okay. So in addition to all of this, you're doing a flip.
Yeah.
Love it. Good. I wouldn't want you to be bored.
Yes.
Okay.
And what do you expect? How much do you think it will be worth when it's completed, and how much will you have bought it for and put in?
We bought the house for $280,000. We did put in around $50,000 of renovations. There is comps in the area that's going for $375,000-ish, but that's like not even fully renovated. The way we renovated it was we kind of spent more because we were kind of bougie, you know? And and because of how the market is, we don't want to buy right now. So we decided to live in it for a few more years. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you guys think that 375 is a really conservative estimate for the after repair value for the property since it's really nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great. We have a gold sink and everything.
And what? Let's go through your that's the last asset then, I guess.
Yeah.
So what are your debts?
Well, we have no debt, actually.
Just a mortgage.
Just our mortgage. So can we tell just a little bit of a backstory about me and Scott?
Like, of course,
yeah,
before. Okay. So with me, I came from a single parent home. My mom raised me and my two boys,
Your two
my
brothers.
Mom raised me, my two brothers. And we were on welfare, food stamps, Section 8. And so I didn't come from a financial educated background, you know, and also we came from similar backgrounds.
With mine, my mother passed when I was 4. And so it was just my dad raising myself and my 2 brothers. But he was always working. He was retired Navy and then went to the post office. So the only thing I've learned from him financially, he never taught me about money, but he was very frugal. And it's something I can't really let go of to this day, just being super frugal.
Yeah.
The only thing I really want to spend money towards is investments. Like, I do want the truck, but I don't know. I'd rather buy another investment.
He knows delayed satisfaction more than anybody that I know. So I'm the spender of the relationship and he's the saver. And so both of us together, we were like always like bickering.
Something's going really right in your financial position if you have all these assets and no debt outside of the mortgage with all this kind of stuff.
Well,
a really solid emergency reserve. All your fundamentals are in place. With this, you have a unique investing approach. I don't even know if it's bad. I'm really interested to dive into that in a second here.
Well, also I wanted to share that we did get married after knowing each other for 2 months, and we've been married for 16 years now. When we first got married, we slept on an air mattress for 4 months and we got used furniture for $100 that furnished our whole apartment. We were pretty much broke. He was in the Marine Corps. I was working odd end jobs. And then we got into $104,000 in debt. And that included 2 car payments, my school loan, which was $60,000. I went to school for my MBA and also television production. And we used the Dave Ramsey method to get out of debt. And that took us 4 years. So yeah, that's where we're at right now.
I think it's fantastic that you've paid off this debt. You've got a great income, and from where your backgrounds started from, it's completely understandable and frankly normal to have gone through a period of collecting debt, and then frankly a lot of people don't pay it off. So you're already ahead of the game. I want to look at your expenses because I think you can get those down. Las Vegas isn't that expensive.
Yeah.
You have what's your mortgage payment?
Our mortgage is a little bit over $1,450.
Okay.
So we did use a VA loan on that. And so our our bills is around $5,600 a month, and that includes tithing, and that's 10%. So it varies. Our electric is 200, our gas is 50, our water bill is 50, and then Geico or for our car insurance is 600 every 6 months, but we do pay that in a one lump sum fee so we could save the $5 service fee a month. So it's only, you're only saving $30, but that's like a little hack that we do. And then for T-Mobile, we have 4 lines for all 4 of us, and we pay 102. That's another military hack that we have. Just ask for the military discount. And then our internet's 112. We have property insurance, which is $5.66. And then we work out at a bougie gym, which is Lifetime Fitness. And we only pay $55 a month for the family. And that's another military hack. And normally it's $150 per person a month.
Yes, so I know.
We save a lot. And then trash and sewer, if we break it down, because that's every quarter, it's about $10 a month. And then our pool, we have to clean our pools. We get a pool cleaner, that's $135. And then YouTube Premium, because he likes to listen to all his motivational stuff, all your guys' podcasts. So that's $22.99. We have Trupanion, which is really expensive. It's $322. And that includes insurance for both of our Frenchies. And our car gas is $100 a month. I do work from home, so that saves us a lot of money. and groceries is probably one of our biggest expenses besides our mortgage, because it's $1,200 a month. It's because I have two boys and they eat more than I do. So yeah. And then restaurants, we budget around $250 a month. So we eat out once a week as a family. And then we have our Amazon miscellaneous budget, which is $400 a month. So it comes out to an average around $5,600 a month that we spend.
It's Military Appreciation Month, so I'd like to personally thank all our past guests who have served and all our listeners who are serving, deployed, veterans, or in the reserves. But I'm not the only one showing appreciation. Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond with exclusive rates, discounts, and tools. This month, join Navy Federal and get $50 when you open a credit card. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate. to see their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. With 24/7 U.S.-based member service and resources for veterans transitioning to civilian life, Navy Federal is here to help you reach your goals. Head to NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Disclaimer, must join an open membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. Annual percentage yield 0.25% for membership savings account. $5 minimum balance to open, maintain membership savings account, and to obtain bonus. Visit NavyFederal.org for more terms and conditions. Saving for a down payment, a wedding, or just looking for extra money to invest? Monarch Money turns your budgeting woes into wins. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best budgeting app overall. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/pockets. Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to manage your money like a pro. Add a partner or family member to your account for no extra cost, so combined finances become a breeze. Customize your budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions, and more. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/pockets. That's monarchmoney.com/pockets for your extended 30-day free trial.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Listen up, business owners. Here's some quick math. Fewer costs equals more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Don't let rising costs sink your business's growth. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/bpmoney. That's netsuite.com/bpmoney. netsuite.com/bpmoney.
My first reaction is that there's a little bit on the groceries, restaurants, and miscellaneous category to cut, but it doesn't seem like there's a ton here. It seems like a lot of your expenses that are there are conscious choices, or like, you know, things that are unique to your situation. Like if you're going to, you know, invest $20,000 in a dog, then you need to have the insurance on that, given what you described there. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense with those types of things. So I don't know, Mindy, what is your reaction?
My reaction is those boys are not going to stop eating. They're going to get even bigger. They're only 10 and 12 right now. They're going to get even bigger and they're going to start consuming. I have two girls and they eat me out of house and home. So I would want you to look at the grocery budget, but I mean, you might be able to squeeze $400 out of that by doing some meal planning and shopping around the sales. We had Aaron Chase from $5 Dinners on episode 3 to talk about how to reduce your grocery budget. So definitely throw that back on the podcast playlist and listen to that again. Because there are some tips and it's really easy to go to the grocery store and, oh, this looks interesting. And, oh, this looks good. And no, make a list and, you know, shop from the list. And also, you know, what are some big bulky items that the boys can eat? Like broccoli will fill them up and, you know, throw some protein at them. And, but yeah, I don't see a ton of things to remove unless you wanted to go bare bones. But I think with your income, you don't really need to. When I first read your application, I thought, oh, well, this is going to be real easy. Let's just cut your expenses. But I think that my recommendations would be back in the investment categories. Scott, what do you think about the investments?
Well, I think here's, and we talked about this on a recent episode. Actually, it will be released after we're recording this, but before we release this episode, but with another couple, and I think what I'm struggling with here is to become wealthy. You know, you need to do two things that are seemingly in conflict with one another. I think one is formulaically build wealth, save this much and invest according to a formula that will get you from X to Y over a set period of time with those types of things, and seize opportunity that is unique to your circumstance in a creative and proactive way. And what I see from your situation is a complete dive down the ladder of those two things, that creative opportunistic front. And what I think you've created here is a financial position that is strong. You are clearly bringing in more money than you spend on a regular basis, month after month after month after month, with no question about that continuing. But all of your investments are in things that are really highly illiquid that you don't have control over. You can't decide to sell or realize portions of your investment at any time, right? I mean, your investments are in a dog. They're in an apartment complex that somebody else is operating and makes all of the decisions around capital, you know, distributions and allocations with it. In the gym, you don't have those decision making, I would imagine, with the way that that's structured. With the retirement, but what's the word? The assisted living facility. With that one, you do have control over that one, but that sounds like it can be a job in and of itself sometimes, rather than a true kind of more of an investment property with that. Same thing with the house, and so that I think is where my instinct comes down to. I love it. Keep doing that stuff. But maybe consider bringing in a formulaic approach to investing in something that is maybe not more traditional, but more, you have more control over. It could be real estate, it could be stocks, it could be, you know, a doubling down in one of these businesses and automating it or something like that. But if you can get into that situation, I think you'll find you'll have a lot more flexibility, because you're at this point where you're like, you could be worth between $500 and $1.5 million with this, right? I don't know with that, but I think you'll feel a lot better if you can say, "Hey, my passive income that I can controllably predict is above that $5,600 mark on average." You know, that seems like a good moving target from your formulaic approach, and then a couple of these ventures may pay off big and accelerate you over that tipping point or produce that passive cash flow. But that's where my instinct comes back to is thinking like, hey, let's continue doing a lot of the cool creative stuff you're doing, but maybe also pull back a little bit and layer in some sort of formula that can move you towards something more predictable, I guess, with some of this stuff, because your finances are very exciting. And I think that might not be, I don't know. Is that something that you're trying to move towards?
That's what I wanted to do. That's why I was thinking real estate more so over other things. But I want to ask you guys what you thought about, like, you know, everybody says, oh, I want to get started, but they never get started. And then my biggest thing now is like, I'm worried about inflation and all this. What do you guys think about that?
I do want to mention that the 24 unit is currently for sale. And since we did put in 50 grand, we will make a little bit.
I'm guessing around 75,000.
So if everything goes well, we will have another 75,000 liquid. So that's another thing I want to ask you guys. Scott does want to get into Airbnb.
Short-term rentals.
And we don't know if we should. I want to stick in Vegas just because we live here and it'd just be easier. But then I know he wants to go to another market.
The only thing with Vegas is it's very restrictive. It's one of the heaviest restrictive short-term rental markets in the U.S. because we do have the Strip and
the casinos and all that.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that's a huge destination. But yeah, the hotels is where everybody wants to stay and they want to exercise their lobby muscle. Okay. So what I am seeing, what Scott, the guest, said was, we never focused on one thing. And I think that that could be a bit of a hindrance. You've got all these really exciting investments and it's super cool to invest in a documentary and you have an NDA and we can't discuss what it is about, but what is that going to get you? I don't see that as a ton of upside unless it's like, you know, the Game of Thrones documentary or, you know, like something really pop culture, you know, that would be very popular, but those are really easy to have Netflix say, you know what, never mind. And then what happens to your investment? So that one, I think I would classify that as risky or speculative. And I personally don't like risky and speculative. I think that real estate is risky and speculative. It's definitely as risky and speculative as I want to go. I shouldn't say I think it's risky and speculative. I think it's a great investment, but that is as risky and speculative as I want to go. So I don't really like the documentary investment personally, and I don't know if there's any way for you to get out of it.
No.
I don't know that if I was in your position, I wouldn't put any more money into it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would hope that whatever happens, happens well. I wish you luck, but I would stop looking at these creative and exciting investments and more focus on the boring ones.
I just want to give a slight disagreement to that with this.
That's fine. You can disagree with me even though you're wrong.
How long you been doing this? How many years have contributed to the current situation with this?
Which is just investing in the random things?
Yeah. Yeah,
the shotgun style, I would imagine. Probably, what, like...
3 years?
Yeah, 3 years now.
Have you learned a lot?
Yeah. I would say, well, because we do go to the investment club. They have once a month meetings. So we go and we're like the youngest ones there. And there's about 50 people that go. So we're around like older people who are much more into the game. So we are learning from them. So that's what another hack that we do is hang out with older people that know what they're doing and then you learn from them.
It's definitely a big learning curve because when I first went there, I didn't understand anything they were saying. And we didn't invest for a good, I don't know, before we jumped into the gyms, the first one.
Here's what your story is going to be if you keep doing this. You're going to get hosed and flushed on a couple of these investments. You're going to have unpredictable payouts at random future dates in large amounts of money on a couple of them, most, you know, hopefully with that. And you're going to get an education in a unique type of investing here, which could be fun and exciting for a lifetime with this. You have no ability to plan around when you will achieve certain financial hurdles with this type of approach to investing, but you could end up very wealthy over a 10-year period with very surprising puts and takes across the portfolio with these kinds of things. So if you're okay with that, it doesn't look irresponsible to me. I mean, you have all these different investments, you're not levered against very many of them in any unsustainable way. All right. The things you're levered against are real estate investments, right? It sounds like the real estate in the assisted living place, and you're primary with that, right? Mm-hmm. You bring in much more income than you spend. I just think your feeling about this is like, what do I have here? I have a random collection of investments. Am I doing something right? Am I doing something wrong? No one else is doing this. What am I crazy? I guess maybe that's what's going through your head to a certain extent. That's
what I was thinking. Yes.
Yeah. But I read it as like, hey, you're gonna have that outcome most likely. And even if you get flushed on all of the investments, which is very unlikely, it seems like you're still in a strong financial position because you save more than you bring in, and you've got 65% of your expenses covered by the disability, which you think will continue for a long time. And you have flexible and creative options for work, including in your business and with high dollar per hour opportunities that come up, Scott. And Gina, you sounds like you have stable employment that it brings in plenty to cover things, even if that doesn't come, even if Scott temporarily has no opportunity in the short run, that's super good. And he then has a base salary job that you can go after, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. I think it's an interesting and creative situation. And frankly, I have no idea how to proceed from here. I think it's going to be about what you want, right? If you want a stable formulaic approach to FI, you're going to have to stop contributing to more of these investments. And as some of them cash out, like the apartment complex, begin diverting that to a formula. That may or may not go faster, but you are also, we have to acknowledge, getting an education that is going to be very unique in these types of investments through your investment club. And maybe continuing that is unpredictably going to generate some sort of return. So I'm having trouble knowing what to make of this. Mindy, you have your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think what is giving me the heebie-jeebies about these investments is there isn't any traditional retirement funds in here. You took the money out of your 401k. I didn't hear you say anything about a Roth IRA or anything in the stock market. And that is where a lot of my investments are. We have divested of some of our real estate just because this market is so hot. It was great to sell, take advantage of what we thought was the top and now isn't even close to the top, and put that money into the stock market, where it continues to grow because the stock market is also on a tear. Do you have any interest in the stock market? I guess I should ask that because it, you know, that's what I would do, but I'm not you. There's a lot of different things. You called it the shotgun approach, which is really quite accurate here. And I'm trying not to sound condescending. I'm not meaning to be, but I think a little bit of focus would help a lot. It sounds like you like real estate. Mm-hmm. How much money is in the gyms again?
Most of those investments were $25,000 to get in
each.
Okay, mm-hmm. each. So you have $25,000 and three gyms, so that's $75,000.
Well, that particular gym deal was for those three.
So three for $25,000. So you're getting $250 a month, or you were. And okay, yeah. So that is, I didn't write down how much was initially in there for that one. So that, we've got a gym, we've got oil and gas, we've got a documentary, some real estate, the residential assisting living, I want to talk about whatever that is.
It's your crypto, most meaningful asset, it sounds like.
Yeah, we do own the house. So we put in $70,000 in that. That included the startup funds and also furnishing the house, buying the beds. We got medical beds for our residents and also just to furnish it fully, make it comfortable for a house.
So that was the $70,000 encompassed all of that. Crypto, I know nothing about. The dog, I don't really know anything about. How old is the dog now, and how old does it have to be before it can start making money?
He's 6 months old now, and he's our moneymaker at 11 months old. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And is there an easy way to connect it, to get him started working?
Because We go on these Facebook groups and they have like, they're called like fluffy French bulldog groups or whatever they call them. But people just post stuff and people reply if they're interested. Or
so there's a way to connect into a group that would be interested in the services that he provides. Okay.
Yes. It's a huge demand.
Oh, there's a lot of interest when we see people post. You'll see just messages saying interested, DM or
and does that cost you any money? Like, are you flying someplace or traveling or do they come to you?
We would go through the vet and he'd do the the polling.
He would do all the stuff. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
We can ship it.
Oh, well, there you go. That's even better. Okay. So it's not an in-person transaction. Okay. Well, that.
What do you guys want from this? Maybe that's like the thing. I was like, what's the goal that you're trying to move towards?
The goal is, are you talking about for the French Bulldog?
No, no. For your overall
for the overall investments.
The overall for me is that I want to just to be able to inspire, travel with purpose, create a legacy for my boys, and write out and finish that children's finance book course as a family. So it's something that could also be passive income as well. And just, yeah, I mean, I love where I work. I love my team. So I will stick out with my W-2 job for a while because it's amazing. You know, I feel really grateful.
Scott, what do you want?
Okay. So I want to be able to work from home, which technically I can't. I'm still a nurse after all, but I have the opportunity to continue school for free to get a nurse practitioner degree. The only thing, my long-term goal, even though there's a certain subspecialty in that field that I would love to do, I don't want to be stuck in the mindset of, oh, I have to work for money. I want to be able to like manage investments, properties, and just more freedom so we can travel around and spend family time, things like that.
Okay. So let me kind of try to boil that, what I heard there, into a financial goal here. So Gina, it sounds like you just want more, a little bit more free time to work on some of these side projects and travel and those kinds of things. And Scott, you want the option to not have to work sooner rather than later, it sounds like.
Yes.
With this. And I don't think you're that far away from that reality with this kind of stuff. And I think the first and most important thing I would look at from a strategic level is your biggest asset by far is your disability.
Yes.
That is $1 million perhaps plus asset. If you think that is likely to continue. Unfortunately, that is your biggest asset with that. And so that 65% of your spending with that, all you need after that is 2,000 more in passive income and you cover your expenses, right? For the most part, or maybe a little bit more than that and you're done, right? And you may or may not have that with your current portfolio across these things. But you have no way of telling that based on what you've invested in with that. And I just think you've done something a little tiny bit out of order if you're going for the optimal approach here, which is you've gotten this interesting and unique investment profile before you've gotten that foundational level of stable, predictable, passive cash flow. And I think that there's no reason to like go and blow up what your formula with these types of things and all that kind of stuff. But if you can find a way to stably generate that additional $2,000 a month and work towards that for a year or two and slowly perhaps redeploy the winnings that you get or the returns that you get from some of these things like the apartment complex into that along with your savings rate over a 1, 2 to 3 year period, you'll cross that finish line. And then you can begin deploying everything you want into this type of stuff, probably guilt and, you know, like not guilt free, but like without having to worry that you've got a unique portfolio with that, because the whole game is to get the other side of the rat race with this and cross that that passive income bridge, you know, and get over that point where you're bringing in more passive income than your lifestyle costs. And then all of this stuff makes perfect sense from that position. So I think that would be how I would zoom out and think about the position is, I don't think you're doing anything wrong with this. I just think that you're not going to feel free the way that you could if you just, you know, put the head down for one, probably not that long, 1, 2, 3 years, and think about how to creatively get that last $2,000 a month very predictably. And then you're good to go. All these things, you could make it big on the Netflix investment. Crypto could do great. You could do great on these apartment complexes. You know, you've got to stabilize and automate your assisted living place with those types of things. But I don't think you're very far away if you kind of just focus in and say, I'm going to make sure that I get a couple of core assets over that threshold. And then it becomes about this diversification, and you're building a venture capital business here in effect with this bit by bit by bit. I think that just the time and place for that is after you've crossed the cash flow threshold with that. That would be my high level 30,000 foot view advice. And perhaps a good starting point to doing that would be doing the dirty work of attempting to value your assets one by one, predict the timing of those returns. If it's in a documentary, just dismiss it from your net worth, right? You can watch it and root for it with those types of things, but you have absolutely no control over whether Netflix buys that or whatever. You may get a ton back. It may be a great investment, but I wouldn't think about it as part of your financial position in the short run here. And I might do that the same thing with a couple of these other investments, like the dog. You know, with that, I can't imagine selling the family dog, with some of those things. But that would, so I would exclude a bunch of them to get a really conservative picture. But one by one, value those assets, figure out the timing of those cash flows and that kind of stuff. And I think from there, think about cutting a couple of them and doubling down and saying, hey, if I just put my head, I don't want to do it. But, you know, if I finish out this residential assisted living, which is your most meaningful asset and where I would suspect this exercise would lead and point first, is that's, you've got the most control and the most value locked up in that residential assisted living property, whatever completing that play looks like. So you don't have to go in and work at it on a regular basis, and it's generating enough income, is where my gut would tell me in this long list is the place to start looking, and then keep marching down the list with it, with that. But if you can get $2,000 a month in passive cash flow, you're done with that. And the rest of your career and life can be
play money,
having more fun with what you're doing, what you like to do, and building out this venture, this alternative investment portfolio. And you'll probably win great with it if you keep, your fundamentals are fine. You obviously analyze these deals. You look at a lot of them, and you pounce when opportunity and cash coincide. It seems to me. I'm getting growing on a rant here. I probably said many things that weren't true. How is that? Is that helpful?
Yeah. Yes. There's one thing though with our memory care home is that we haven't paid ourselves yet from it. So we've been in it for about two years. And so all of that, we're just putting into a savings fund for the business. So that's another thing too, is that eventually we do want to start paying ourselves, but we haven't yet, just because our overhead costs is pretty high. And also things come up, things break. And so we have to get that fixed. That's one of our main goals. We do, before though, Scott was there a lot working. He would sleep there, be a caregiver, then go to his nursing job during the day. You know, so we were all tired.
how do you guys feel about your skills with respect to financial modeling?
What do you mean?
Not great.
I think that would be a really valuable skill to invest in developing. You can take a YouTube course or something free on it, but if you can begin building out basic financial modeling skills, you know, or maybe there's someone in your investment club, we'll be good with that. I think that will really help you, because I imagine, you know, when you talk about that rental, that assisted living property, which I think we can get into, because that's your biggest investment. You've invested $75K. It sounds like you've poured more money into that over time. You've had to buy the property. You've invested money. You've spent the night there. You've invested large. Your time is valuable. So you've invested probably hundreds of hours or thousands of hours.
A lot of hours
into that. So maybe your investment in there is $200,000 or $250,000 with that, right? And what I'm hearing is things break with that kind of stuff. And here's the income and expenses. A good budget, a good financial model for these businesses will include things like, here's how much the salary and payroll and bonuses and benefits will be per employee. And here's my CapEx, office supplies, repair mm-hmm. budget, those types of things in it, just like you would for a rental property with those types of things. And I think that a good a set of, if you can develop and hone your financial modeling skills, it will give you a much clearer picture into the prospects of this business over the next couple of years and what you'd need to do there. Because I suspect you're just missing things in your forecast because you're doing it back of the napkin that are like, hey, the roof's going to need to get replaced on this business, or mm-hmm. you know, this the beds are going to need to be replaced every couple of months because they're going to get more. I have no idea what the CapEx expenses are in this business, but I imagine some of those things are getting missed because there perhaps is not a good budgeting architecture in there. And if you're interested in doing this type of stuff over a long career, I suspect that being able to look at financial models and immediately know when there's crap in there will be very advantageous to you as you make more investments in things like gyms and those types of things. So I think that would be a skill that I'm noticing is it might dramatically change your ROI, your decision making on many of these things over time.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason too why we do want to extend out and renovate the memory care home and add two rooms, is so we could get to the cap of having 10 residents, because right now we're only licensed for 8. So if we get to 10, then that means more income. So that's our main goal as well.
It would help out a lot if we had that 10. Even for like, the location wasn't ideal. I mean, it's like a
old Summerlin area.
The people Vegas. That live there, they've owned the houses since 1980. Most of them are original owners, but if I were to do it over, I'd probably go on a little bit higher scale neighborhood than that. And you could demand more income from the residents.
What do you expect to generate from this business over the next year?
After everything, we probably roughly like 5,000, maybe 5 to 10,000.
That's a year. Net.
Yes.
And that's without you working in it. That's with you hiring everything out.
So we have a good manager now.
She's amazing.
And she's taken a lot of responsibilities off our plates. We still do the financial stuff and planning, but we don't have to go in anymore. Well, it's been a while since we went in.
What's after you move the property to the full capacity, the 10 units?
Oh, after it would.
Oh, after.
More.
Oh, after. Like, oh, yeah. I'd imagine about anywhere from 20 to 40,000, just depending on if we can stay full. But we do pretty good with.
How much would it be worth just to sell everything today? If you sold that entire business today, how much would you realize?
Well, right now per bed, it goes for 15,000. So since we're licensed for 8, what is that? 15. I'm not good with math. So 15,
30, 60. So what? 90?
Yeah. So you could sell it for 90,000.
That's just the business. And then the house, we bought it for 275, and the house is worth around 320, 325.
So the thing with the house is I don't think it'd go for the regular price because of, I mean, as the comps in the area, because it does have like all the things we had to do to set up for the home, like a fire sprinkler system, fire system, all these things add up.
Handicapped, all our bathrooms are handicap accessible. So yeah.
Based on what I just heard, let's say you sell it for 300 and you would collect 30,000 from the sale, right? After the mortgage. And then you have another 90,000 for the business. That's $120,000. Right now, you would be selling that business. You collect 120,000, or the after tax amount, instead of collecting the 5 to 10,000 in profit from that. Which sounds like, and it sounds like a lot of your time is going towards collecting that 5 to 10,000. To me, that's a sell sign for this business in its current state. if the future state of the business is different, then and dramatically different, then that says I got some work to do to transform the business to that. Just because that's a 5 or 10% or 5 to 10% or less ROI in a business that is probably not growing a ton with a lot of these things with that, right? And it's a private business and it's doing a lot of those. It's not generating a huge cash on cash return relative to its value with it, and it's not likely to appreciate unless you perform a lot of activity, right, with it. So if you complete the activity, you have 10 units, you're making 40 grand a year. How much is that business worth?
Another 30,000.
Yeah. I would say, yeah.
130,000. So $130,000 business spitting out $40,000 a year in cash is a great business. $130,000 business spitting out 20,000 is in that middle zone, I think, with a lot of this kind of stuff, right? Because you could take that money and buy 2-3 Airbnbs, for example, and potentially make a different ROI on that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, again, where that skill of financial modeling, that hard skill, being able to put this into a spreadsheet and say, best case scenario, this happens, best case scenario, this happens. You know, I think you'll have to play around and make some tax moves. I think that will result in you making moves. I don't know with this particular business, but I think it will result in you making moves that are hard and big and getting out of and into investments, but it might clean up your position dramatically when you're like, oh, I'm making this much per hour in this business and I'm making this much per hour in this business, right? You know, I have this option here and I don't have it here. My best possible state for this one is this. That doesn't make any sense. I have to completely change up my formula with that. But I think that's where I'm kind of sensing opportunity lies with a lot of this stuff. And I think that you have to start with that business because that's where you've invested the most and have the most value. Don't worry about what you've put in. That's called sunk cost. Right. That's, but what is it worth today? If I'm looking at this as an objective outsider, where is it going to go? And is that good value or should I sell and restart? And if the worst case scenario is you get out of this for 100K and then you restart in the higher end one that you just said, because you know that now and that's what the market is going, maybe that's the start of a huge business for you that works really well. And this is not wasted. It's a huge, it's just an educational experience with it. But
exactly.
Again, I think that's where I would begin my search by modeling out every one of your assets in detail, starting with the biggest and most important and the ones you have most control over, and going down the list, thinking through what are their prospects today? Where are they going to go in the future? How, you know, am I budgeting correctly? Because, you know, if you're going to own assets and be a venture investor, you will want your CEOs of your businesses to, as they will all grow, many of them will grow into big businesses, to present you with an annual budget that you will beat up and believe or not. I know this from personal experience. That would be my biggest piece of advice for this. Not that you should change up fundamentally what you're doing with this, just that's a tool that I think is necessary if you're going to go down this approach, or it would be immensely helpful to you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Scott said. When you started talking about the residential assisted living and that Scott, the guest, was working in there, the numbers started to be a little bit more, a little bit less exciting. So I love the finance, what did you call that, Scott? Financial modeling. Can you find a YouTube video that we can?
Yeah, I took one with a guy named Excel is Fun, or the channel is Excel is Fun. It was very nerdy. I took it a few years ago. It was a 2-week thing, and I took it right before I started my job and found it immensely helpful. You don't need to be the pro at this, but if you can feel very comfortable inside that spreadsheet and making basic assumptions, or at least the key assumptions, in these unique businesses. And you got to be able to just do it from scratch. You can't use templates if you're going to be doing creative stuff like this, because you'll need to figure out like what is the actual key driver of the value and expense in an assisted living place or a dog in-person visit company or whatever it is. So those are, you know, so I think that will just take if like 2 weeks to study there, might give you a lot of value.
Yeah.
Yes, that sounds like something we need.
Yeah,
I'm interested. I'm very interested.
Cool. Yeah, I think that'd be super helpful.
Any other areas that you want us to dive into here? This is again unique, so we haven't had a chance to think through this, and I'm very grateful for you guys for bringing this to us, because it's made us think in a new way. Or at least me.
Yeah, if we do sell the 24 unit, we'll probably get around 70 to 75,000. So that's liquid. And we do want to invest in. Originally, we were going to get a female fluffy Frenchie so we could just be set, you know, and just make the babies there that way. But then we decided that we wanted to do Airbnb.
Short-term rentals. I'm just thinking real estate.
Yeah.
Because to me, I see that as the biggest wealth builder. Depreciation, things like that, write off on taxes, and being able just to travel, because I want to do a little bit distance between from wherever we get the property.
Okay.
It does worry me though. But
if you're doing Airbnb, if that is your plan to purchase a property and do an Airbnb, I would say listen to episode 364 of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, where we interviewed Avery Carl, who does Airbnb. She has more like general information about the concept of Airbnb. Like she does it in the Smoky Mountains area. And she said, going into a place where you have already existing Airbnb laws is the best place. If you're already going to do it outside of where you live, do it where they've already discovered or decided on the Airbnb laws and the short-term rental laws. And because then you don't have to worry about, oh, well, it penciled out as an Airbnb, but it doesn't really work as a long-term rental. And now my city just changed all the laws. So she's got a lot of great information on that episode.
Yes, yeah. I just listened to that one recently.
Oh, good.
I like Airbnb. I like Airbnb as an asset class because there's a big shortage. You think that the travel is going to come roaring back with a lot of this stuff. I think it's local and depends on a lot of those things. And I think it will be yet another one of these little areas that you guys are exploring with this, and another business line. So I would be cautious of just kind of like saying, how do I focus for some time on this and maybe replicate it a few times with it? But I think that's where you're a little bit of more modeling and thinking about everything and a little bit more cold numbers. What is the ROI on this going to be? What's the upside? Am I being realistic? Does my model show that? Am I making the right trade-offs with these types of things? So you can allocate your cash as you come into it in these intervals into the highest and best use, rather than kind of whatever happens to show up when you have the cash available and the inclination with that. So I think that's the biggest thing is Airbnb might well be it. And I think Airbnb is a phenomenal, is the move across the country in many markets for ROI right now. And in the future, there's a lot of really good tailwinds behind it. But I just think that it comes back down to like, I have no idea. It's impossible to tell whether that's a better investment than what you've currently got here, unless we can get more detail into the numbers and the prospects of each of one of your individual investments and area, and whether there's capability to deploy more money there and that kind of stuff.
The reason why, too, I want to get into Airbnb is because I want to make it an experience as well. I was looking into Airbnb glamping, also yurts, and even mini houses, because people like those weird, crazy Airbnbs, you know, they want the full experience. So that's what I want to be able to do, is get either land or property, but also in the backyard have a yurt or a mini house. And then have a room where there's a flower wall with, you know, a big lighted backdrop that says dream big, you know. People like stuff like that. They want, when you look at Airbnbs, people want that Instagrammable type of house, you know, or your experience to be able to share, I guess.
Yeah. Well, look, I think you guys are not short in ideas and all that kind of stuff. I think you guys have, and like, I think it's great. I think you've got all this, there's so many good options here, and you guys are just doing the right things fundamentally to generate liquidity to sustain this. But again, I think it comes just all back down to what does your model say? And, you know, maybe using that to drive a big part of the decision-making with a lot of these things, because they're all good ideas. At some point though, you're missing opportunities and taking risk and diversifying unnecessarily with the spread across all of these things. So that would be the biggest, I think, fundamental with a lot of this.
I just had a question about as far as like mortgages. our mortgage is at 4.5%. And at the time, that was good. Do you recommend like a cash out refinance? I could do the IRRL, which is a VA refinance, just to lower the rate. What do you guys think? Should we try to get some of that capital in case we can use it, deploy it somewhere, or?
I think, yeah, a refinance makes a lot of sense to me. Just either you're going to lower your payment or you're going to pull out cash and probably keep your payment pretty close. So the refinance makes a lot of sense to me at the strategic level with one of those options. If you have plans for it, maybe consider pulling some cash out. That's what I did across my portfolios over the last year is pull out a bunch of cash with a couple of those. What do you think, Mindy?
I would say if you have a place to put the money, then refinance, as long as it's going to make sense to refinance. You don't want to go from 3.3 to 3.2 and spend a lot of money doing it.
From 4.5 to like 3.5 or something lower with that on their primary with this.
No, their primary is 3.3.
This is on the rental.
4.5.
Oh, it's 4.5. Oh, yeah, okay. 4.5. I have the wrong information here. 4.5.
So
oh yeah. You go ahead, Scott.
Yes, we go.
I think we started late, and that's how I lost track of this. Usually, we have plenty of time with this. I am so sorry,
goodbye,
guys.
Scott.
I really enjoyed this. Really enjoyed meeting you. I think one of your sons sent us a keychain. Is that
yeah? They. I went to their meetup.
That's awesome. I'm so sorry. I have to run here.
No, it's all good.
Shoot.
We appreciate your guys' time.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't have to
helpful.
Run.
And we'd be happy to chat again sometime with this. But thank you for coming on the show, listening, and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. So with a 4.5% mortgage rate, yes, I would almost assuredly, you would almost assuredly be able to find a lower rate. And I would refinance out of that. Of course, run the numbers and make sure that it's not going to cost you $10,000 to save $1.50 on your mortgage. But I think you're going to find some pretty great rates. I have a lender who is an amazing VA lender, but I don't know if he does VA refis. So I am sending him a note right now asking him if he does.
Okay.
Do you know John Lalonde by any chance?
No.
And you said that's IRRL?
Yes.
Or VA.
Or they call it a streamline as well. VA streamline loan.
VA streamline. I spelled that wrong.
Because all that would do is that would just lower our interest rate. But I was wondering, should we try to take out like a HELOC or just have some funds available if we need it?
Yeah. So the HELOC is going to have a variable rate. And if you could get a refinance that brings down your mortgage, your mortgage rate that isn't going to cost a lot, I would go that route instead because that's fixed.
Okay.
I don't know if you've got a 15 or 30 year, but I would go with a 30 year because that's a lower price point than, or a lower payment than the 15. And you could always increase your payment, your payoff time, but why would you refi into a 15 year again when you need that money to deploy someplace else? So, I would definitely, when I hear from him, I'll let you know. I'll send you an email.
Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, I think there's a lot to think about here, but I also think that, I mean, you guys have the income covered. It's a great position to be in. I would personally like to see more traditional investing. You've got the creative investing down pat, but the more traditional investing is kind of like your baseline, your safety zone. It's not safe. Past performance is not indicative of future gains, but it's kind of like the set it and forget it. I'll just keep putting money into the 401k and it'll just grow by itself or whatever it does. And then you can focus on these other things. It doesn't like take up any mental bandwidth to throw it in a 401k.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding the 401k loan, did you take out a loan or did you cash it out?
I cashed it out.
And
21,000.
Did you do this within the COVID window? Because you said you paid, you took the 10% hit. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be penalty free.
It was actually supposed to be 20% penalty, but because it was during COVID, it was only 10%.
A 20% penalty?
Yeah, when you cash out.
I thought it was a 10% penalty in addition to taxes. But if you took it out, if you'd make the withdrawal because you suffered a COVID hardship, you shouldn't have to take, you shouldn't pay the penalty. And then you have 3 years to pay it back or pay taxes on it. Yeah. So I would, do you have a CPA?
We just found one.
Okay. So. I would ask them about that in specific detail, because I don't think you were supposed to pay 10%. As long as you have a COVID hardship and can prove the COVID hardship, I don't think you pay the 10% penalty, and you have 3 years to pay it back or pay taxes on it. So you can do that over the course of 3 years. You can do it all in the third year or the first year, whatever. Yeah, definitely talk to your CPA about what is the best course of action and what are your options there. But yeah, I think we've kind of covered a lot today. And I would love to check back in with you in like 6 or 12 months and see where you have decided, you know, what financial modeling you've done and what you've decided on, you know, the different options that you have available to you. But you have a lot of things to look into and lots of time to have these money dates and sit down and talk about, you know, each individual thing. And I'm excited for your prospects.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're so excited to be here. This is a privilege and an honor, and we're so grateful.
I'm so grateful that you shared your story today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And we will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Whew, boy, Scott, that was Gina and Scott, and they have a fun, fun story. What did you think of their investments?
I loved it. You know, I do something different with my money, right? I invest in real estate stocks in a company called Bigger Pockets. And I have a pretty simple, you know, formulaic approach to that kind of stuff. But I honestly, you know, when I hear stuff like this, I get excited and I wonder, like, maybe they're going to do really, really well with this approach over the long run with this, if they can kind of keep taking shots like this on creative things opportunistically and develop a big skill set. You think it's going to be much riskier at first, and you're going to have some big losses, maybe a couple big wins. But over the long run, you think this is a pretty interesting skill set that's giving you exposure to something that's a little different. And so it's impossible. I have absolutely no framework to be able to tell what the return profile of the asset, the variety of asset classes that they are participating in. I have no idea what the return profile is going to be over a long period of time with those types of things. I think it would be extremely difficult to calculate that, but I'm excited for them, interested. And I think that, like I mentioned in the show and in the intro, I think that if they learn how to model and more appropriately evaluate these assets from a financial perspective, it'll just guide their decision-making and give them that much better odds.
Yeah. As I said at the very end of the show, I'm really excited to talk to them again in 6 or 12 months and see where they've gone, see where they've, you know, how did it go with the dog? And did they, you know, did anything ever come out of the documentary and a lot of different things. So I'm super excited to talk to them. I can't wait to check in with them again. And I just put a note on my calendar so that I bring them back in about a year to catch up. Cause I think this is a fun way to think about investing. But I also want to remind our listeners that they are investing from a position of no debt, and they aren't leveraging their investments. They are taking the $25,000 and putting all of that in there. They're not borrowing against that. So
yeah, if they had credit card debt or they had student loan debt or other types of situations like that, I'm completely aligned with Mindy on that. This would be irresponsible, because you're putting money into assets that may never pay off, or you'll have a completely unpredictable, like when you invest in a documentary, God only knows when they're going to finish the documentary, even if they present you the schedule, and if someone's going to buy it, like Netflix, right? So like there's a huge, you know, pray and wait component to that. Doesn't mean it's a bad, maybe you invest in 100 of those and your ROI is 15, 20% across the 100 investments. It could be a great asset class. Can't say anything about that, but you can't do that when you have debt or cash flow problems in that are fundamentally not being addressed in your personal financial position. They don't have that.
In addition to that, they have almost guaranteed income for at least 5 years and probably, unfortunately, probably for the rest of his life with his disability. So there's really specific levers that they have pulled that contributed to our conversation today. But yeah, I'm excited for them and I can't wait to catch up with them. Scott, this episode did run a little long. We should get out of here. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
From episode 222 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench and I am Mindy Jensen saying, catch you later, future dudes.
Military Appreciation Month, so I'd like to personally thank all our past guests who have served and all our listeners who are serving, deployed, veterans, or in the reserves. But I'm not the only one showing appreciation. Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond with exclusive rates, discounts, and tools. This month, join Navy Federal and get $50 when you open a credit card. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. With 24/7 U.S.-based member service and resources for veterans transitioning to civilian life, Navy Federal is here to help you reach your goals. Head to NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Disclaimer, must join an open membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. Annual percentage yield 0.25% for membership savings account. $5 minimum balance to open, maintain membership savings account, and to obtain bonus. Visit NavyFederal.org for more terms and conditions.